Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Pride. What about my pride, Nick? At least you have pride.
Welcome to Properly Howard, a podcast that reviews classic films and other pulp fiction. Today we take a look at 1992's Leap of Faith. Starring Steve Martin as a shifty traveling faith healer, Leap of Faith tells an improbable tale of Midwesterners falling for promises made by someone who is clearly a liar and a criminal. With me to discuss this film, as always, is Dr. Anthony LaDon.
Was there a clown horn in the background?
There was a phone call coming through in the background.
Can we try it again?
Without the...
Steve, when's the last time you ate at a... diner that wasn't trying to punch above its weight? I'm talking greasy spoon, small town diner.
Wow, that's a good question. It's been a while, I think. I might have been on the road to Seattle. Oh no, I think Eureka.
Eureka's got small town diners like that.
Yeah, I think it was in Arcata.
I just ate at one a couple days ago, and it was like, you know, Columbus, Ohio. It was like right next door to like a really high-end coffee shop. This diner was like, nope, we know exactly what we are. We're not going to raise our prices. And it was great. I loved it. I love these little greasy spoon diners. And I feel like there's just far less of them these days. I don't know how they stay in business, to be honest, but I love going to them if I can.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, you wonder, like, you'll go to, I mean, like, around here, you know, in Sonoma County, like, everything's expensive. Like, you pay more for it to feel authentically cheaper. But like, you'll just run into these places where it's like, you know, you get like a 7-course breakfast for like $1.68, and you're like, look, I don't even like,
how is this possible?
Even if the food was fake, like, fake food's more than that, you know. It's like like plastic versions of eggs are still expensive, you know. I don't understand what's happening. I mean, I wonder if this is just like, these are like billionaires that are like, you know what, I'm just gonna feed truckers.
Well, all right, so this is an interesting question. So I like these places. I will go to these places, but I'm kind of a coffee snob.
Yeah.
And so if the coffee, so it's almost like I won't order Sarah and I went to one of these the other day. And she ordered the coffee and I was like, no, I'm fine. And I was just kind of going to wait. I was maybe going to have a sip of her coffee. Like an asshole, I was going to have a sip of her coffee and decide whether it was worth ordering the coffee, because that's like the one thing.
Like a royal taster before you.
It's the one thing that I just can't go back on. It's like, look, I've seen the promised land. I am not going back to the wilderness with coffee.
Yeah, I'm similar. Like, here's the thing. My first coffee of the day has to be good coffee. But I'll settle into a diner, a bottomless, you know, way too thick of a mug full of hot brown water from a diner. I don't mind. I'll cream it up.
So you're saying like, as long as you were able to make your little Americano at home with your fancy machine.
It may not even necessarily have to be the first coffee. I just need a promise of good coffee in that day. Mm. And I have that agency and I'll do that. So I kind of feel like the coffee at the diner is part of the experience. And again, I want those that mug wall to be so impossibly thick, like an inch. You know what I mean? Like, it's so crazy. Yeah. It's like you're like bottomless coffee, but at the end of the day, you probably had like maybe a cup of coffee. It's just
you want a mug. You want a mug that would kill a caveman.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, it's like whatever bowling balls are made of.
I got a couple of those at home. I got an old Denny's mug at home, you know, from like 1984 or whatever. And I love it. I love it. I got it off a desk. It was just holding pens.
Yeah, right.
I was like, no, this is, you've underestimated this mug, sir. Anyway, I like
it's funny that you mentioned Denny's. I was just in Vegas and like, there's a lot you could do in Vegas. That's kind of what it's made for. And it's kind of like, so I'd get there, I have to get up early, take the dogs, go potty and everything, and walk through the casino floor watching people like arrive. And I just heard one woman go, now I know the Denny's is around here somewhere. And I just really thought that was, I found that so charming that here they are, they're in Vegas. Uh-huh. And she's like, look, okay, I know we're settling in, but let's just figure out where the Denny's is.
Yeah, it's a comfort thing. And, you know, I honestly didn't know we were going to talk about this, but there is something about a fundamental difference between conservatives and progressives, where you can kind of find a conservative because when they go to a restaurant, they want to go to one that they've been to before. They know the menu. They're going to order the same thing off the menu. Whereas a progressive tends to think, well, what's the new thing? What town can I go to where I've can go to a restaurant where I've never been before? It's a menu I've never seen before. For me, that's the, you know, there's pleasure in that. So I mean, of course, I'm all about the new restaurant and the new menu, right? But I could see, like, look, you're in Vegas. You don't want an all-you-can-eat buffet for breakfast. You want the Denny's menu. That's comfort for you. And I see the appeal of both.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess it makes me a moderate. I like to find a new place, go to that place a few times, and order the same thing.
Interesting. All right. Well, this movie Leap of Faith has what I think is a pretty strong beginning, and part of that does feature a diner scene, and I like these small town diners. I like it when it feels like a small town diner. I think that there's, you know, 1992 when this was out.
Yeah.
I think you could find 1,000 of these diners across America in towns that look just like this. It's kind of a little vacation for me, the beginning of this film. Like I like long road trips. I like the idea of stopping at a small town and just sort of experiencing the Americana of it. And I like these little diners. I like this diner that they go to.
So for you, the movie was good because there was a diner, and then once they left the diner, it went downhill.
After the diner scene, there's not much to like about this movie. I really like the way this movie starts. I like this. Cop scam.
You think I don't know how it is? Risking your life for minimum wage? Never enough for those pretty dresses or that fancy summer camp all her friends went to? Then some rich asshole takes not only your wife, but your own little girl.
Have you seen her?
Can't say that I have, Lowell, but I know people. And I know she misses the way you protected her, made her feel like a princess. Well, you smiled at her the night of the prom.
Looks down to the violin case.
Good times you had teaching her the violin.
The what?
Violin. Claire DeLune. We played that together.
No rich stepdaddy can give her that, Lowell.
She hasn't called in over a year.
Because you made her choose between you and her mother. Brother, you drove her away.
Maybe I'll call her tonight.
Tonight. When I get a phone right there on that bus.
I love this scene. I think it's fantastic. What do you do with this scene? You establish this guy's a con artist, right? That's fundamentally who he is. He's got a team that's rooting him on. And they've got a whole system. They've got a whole scam. Like, he's going to wear an earpiece. You're going to have someone on a computer looking up, you know, the top Catholic names, right? Because he saw the rosary on his dash. You've got, basically, you've got Steve Martin showing how good he is as a con artist. And on top of that, it's a victimless crime. In fact, at the end of it, the cop reunites with his estranged daughter. And so this guy's a con artist, but you like him because not only is there no harm in what he's doing, he's actually bringing families together. Like, there's actually a purpose for him to be driving across America lying to cops. Like, the outcome outweighs the duplicitous nature of the business, which is the lie he continues to tell himself throughout the film, until the climax or whatever. But I think that the scene does really well to establish who this character is and what this story is about.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, so I've seen this movie a bunch, and I watch this movie every time hoping I'll like it more. Because it's, I feel like it's almost there.
Yeah, it's a near miss, this movie.
Yeah, I feel like it has all the right ingredients, but maybe the portions of the have been put together in the recipe wrong. You know what I mean? Like, there's a story being told that is compelling, but most of the time it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I still enjoy it. It's very, so for me, this is a diner for me. This is a meal that I'm like, I'm going to be full. I probably won't like love all of it. I'll eat more of it than I want. But at the end of the day.
Yeah. You're not expecting the French laundry when you go into a diner. And right. So because of that, your expectations are low enough that you can experience it for what it is.
Yeah, like I know that, like, in this particular, like, for me, the movie Leap of Faith is something I will return to because I know the eggs won't be too runny, the toast will have too much butter, and the coffee's just a little burnt. But altogether, it is absolutely 100% predictably fine.
On top of that, now that you will not darken the door of a church, this is the closest you're going to get to God.
This is the absolute closest I get to evangelism. And sometimes, like, it used to frustrate. And when I first saw it, I was like, I was frustrated because I'm like, how is this not a better movie?
Yeah.
And so I chased it for a while going, well, maybe it's better. And I'm like, no, it's exactly what it is. I wouldn't say it's a waste of a performance because I think there are parts of Steve Martin's performance that I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think sometimes he absolutely nails it. And other times I feel like, well, what are you trying to play this for laughs? And if you didn't, would that be even better?
Yeah. I want to talk about Steve Martin. I think that he should be good in this role. I think you think about him, you're like, yeah, I can see him in this role. And yet I think, you know, I was watching the Ebert review. I think Ebert's right in that it's a little bit of a departure for him. He's a little bit darker. He's a little bit more cynical. And so his performance is just surface, right? He can do that. He can do the performance thing. And he seems natural on stage in that way. And yet there's something deeper. There's a couple layers. There's the cynic, the con man underneath, and then there's the wounded little boy who was left on the street corner underneath that. And underneath that, there's like the guy at the end who's going to, you know, thank Jesus for the rain, you know. So it's a layered performance, and yet he kind of doesn't work in this film. Like, is it possible that he delivers a good performance, but it was just the just off enough that it didn't quite work in this film?
I think a lot of this, you know, because I know Steve Martin can go a little, can really do the cynical, be the darker, and still be charming, but also, you know, kind of untrustworthy. I've seen him do that, and I think he can. I think this is a director issue. I mean, this director is like, who? I mean, if you look at his, I mean, most of his stuff is TV, which means it's probably an episode here or there. I mean, I guess he directed the movie No Mercy with Richard Gere and Kim Basinger, and but like nothing really particularly memorable. And I think, I guess that one of the producers or something wanted him fired, but the studio wouldn't let it happen. So who knows, right? And so I because a lot of times I just feel like it just doesn't, the scenes don't work moving to each other very well. It's like the choices seem a little bit odd. It's like it's not dark enough to be overly cynical, and it's not light enough to be hopeful. It's very much just sort of there. And you have such a ripe critiques can be made. This is really something that, like, what do you want to critique? Are you want to critique the commodification of religion? Do you want to create a complicated, you know, lead that is at one point despicable, but at another point maybe sympathetic? Do you want to bring out any of the tension of people that are, you know, grifters for hire, or, you know, I mean, all these things are there, but they're just left on the plate. And it's because, like, by the time we get this sort of, you know, this moment of, you know, Steve Martin's character leaves and he's thanking Jesus for the, it seems like, well, okay, I guess, you know, it's like,
yeah, I mean, I didn't quite understand. I do want to talk about the end of this movie, but before I do that, I want to play you the trailer for it.
Just off the main highway and a wide spot in the road is Rustwater, Kansas. Prime pickings for Jonas Nightingale.
Are you ready for a miracle?
Part showman.
I hear Satan knocking, but he can't come in.
Part salesman.
We don't need no preacher selling us a lot of bunk.
I'm not selling bunk, friend. I'm giving it away.
Messiah of the interstate.
Take a whiff at what just walked in.
Special today's steak, no liver, no fish, no ham, no spinach.
Awful lot of nose there, Marva.
No lip.
She wants me.
I think you should stick with your Bible pointers.
All right, let's get some empty lives a little meaty.
Section 2.
First row, the white shirt, back problem.
And you, sir, come on up on stage and cure your backaches.
You don't care what these people need. Your truck broke down and you're looking to cash in.
I give my people a good show. Plenty of music.
All he's doing is selling fairy tales to a bunch of people who thank him for it.
Whoa! I feel a healing coming on.
My sister thinks you're fake.
Well, maybe I am and maybe I'm not.
If I get the job done, what difference does it make?
Get the strength in your life!
You believe in miracles, right?
I'd like to hear what your sister has to say on the subject.
I believe in life. What it does to you and what you do back.
Are you ready for the truth?
I'll bet the last time you had a man was when Nixon was in office.
No, you're so manipulative.
Manipulators are sneaky. I'm obvious.
Hallelujah! Hallelujah!
The sign of the cross!
A series of alleged miracles have occurred in the town of Rustwater, Kansas.
Alleged. You said it, babe.
They say a little faith can work wonders.
Hey, Rev, what about me?
I don't think I got any more healing power left in me tonight.
But once in a while, it just might do the impossible.
Are you worried this time, Jones, that somebody's actually up there watching?
A Paramount Pictures presents Steve Martin, Deborah Winger, Leap of Faith.
Whoa! Am I in white boy heaven or what?
That's the whole movie.
Yeah, and that's actually a better movie.
That's the whole movie. They didn't leave anything out. In fact, a lot of the best lines are in this.
Yeah.
This is everything we got. Do you want more?
Right, and the more was actually kind of less.
The more was less. The trailer is better.
Yeah.
The trailer is better than the movie.
And that's I think that's kind of the what we're talking about here is that like yeah, you could actually give me that trailer and then now not okay, so which of these parts are we going to explore? Like I said, yeah. Are we going to make this charlatan sympathetic? That's a trick and that's quite a movie if you could pull that off. But not really. You don't do it. Are we going to, explore, like I said, the themes of, how religion can be commodified and people can be taken advantage of? Like, are we going to explore that a little bit? It's like, no, we're just going to show that it can happen. But there's nothing more to it. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't want to say it's lazy.
Well, it's trying. Look,
it's trying.
It's but, trying yeah, I mean, and failing.
It's like watching me like try to dunk, I guess. Like I'm getting off the ground. You know what I'm trying to do. But at some point, you're going to have to say, look, either I need him to roll his ankle or just we got to stop watching.
The line to me that was maybe the best line of the movie is, I'm tired of being manipulated. He says,
manipulators are sneaky. I'm obvious.
And that's kind of the microcosm of the story. He's so clearly a con man that you almost think, well, anyone who's duped by this guy really, really wants to be duped. They're playing along or they just enjoy being around the personality, or they believe that God is doing something through this charlatan. So who cares if it's a charlatan? Because ultimately God's going to do something in your life. So how can you really blame this guy? They don't quite ever make him sympathetic. Even the story about like his mom leaving him as a child, like that really doesn't make me feel sorry for him.
No,
because he ends up leaving the child.
Right. Yeah. So that's the thing is they doesn't. And that's the thing is I feel like there's, whether it's intentional or not, there's an attempt, you know, it feels like, okay, well I feel like nowadays I think we do a little bit better with this anti-hero narrative maybe. Mm-hmm. And that's the issue, right? It's like you have a guy who you try to make sympathetic by saying he was left as a child, and he eventually leaves a child behind, but in his mind, it's for their own good, which might suggest that that's what his mother leaving him was like. Maybe there's more to that, right? So, but we're kind of left with that going, like, maybe we can think that, maybe we don't. The movie is not particularly interested in that, it seems. And I think there's a Jonas Nightingale story to be told, but I think we get distracted by the Deborah Winger, Liam Neeson butterfly subplot.
Oh my gosh. That's just the worst.
Yeah. And so I think that's part of this problem, right? This movie doesn't, I mean, you can have I think you need the foil that's trying to expose him, and it doesn't matter. Cause I think that's actually a very, it feels like a very pertinent thing today, right? Like there are some people that are just going to follow somebody regardless of the evidence to suggest they shouldn't.
So,
and I think that that's good.
I have a question about that. These, the choir who's traveling with him, the angels.
Uh-huh.
So at one point during the cop scene, Meatloaf turns around, by the way, Meatloaf is in this movie.
Yeah. Underutilized Meatloaf.
Meatloaf,
like this is just Meatloaf for Meatloaf's sake.
Meatloaf turns around and I guess Omelia played by Dolores Hall.
There's an alternate universe where people just don't accept the fact that we just said Meatloaf turns around.
And he says, where are your loyalties? And it's sort of like a really quick thing. You could almost miss it. Where's Omelia's loyalties? And she points heavenward, right?
Right.
So she's like, I'm not putting my faith in this con man. I have no loyalty to this con man. I'm still a believer. And so I'm wondering how many of these choir folks are actually on to him. Like they have to know, right?
So they have to know
he's a con man.
That's been a problem for me in the last few times I've watched it, because there are multiple shots throughout the movie where they you have the sort of like, maybe not front and center, but clearly one of the choir members gives like a look like, well, what's going on here? Like there's multiple times of that suggest that this choir is not onto him, or some members are not onto him, which to me
at one point, one of the women in the choir was like, that's not, he told me his father invented Teflon.
Right. And so the thing that I'm, so again, this is what the movie is constantly teasing these concepts, but not delivering on any of them, because there's an interesting movie there. If you, like I said, you could do a movie about people that are like, oh, I didn't realize we've been traveling with a con man the whole time. There's a discovery point. There's an interesting element, right?
But you left that on the table. If that's what you were trying to tell, that's
right.
The story you were trying
to tell. You subtly hinted towards an interesting thing, and then you instead went to clapping for butterflies. Like, I just don't like the choices. Like I said, that's the choices that were made versus the ones that were ignored are kind of the problem, right? And I mean, like, why does he jog with his midriff showing? Like, I need to know this.
I want to call it. All right. So let's describe this. He jogs, which is not it's not a given in 92. Like, you could jog, or you don't need to jog. It's not like everyone jogs. It's not like, it's not against the law not to jog. He prefers to jog with a leather black cowboy hat, jeans. He says he used to jog in his cowboy boots, and inexplicably, a half shirt.
Yeah.
So he's like a member of the Village People when he jogs.
Yeah, I mean, this has bothered me since 1992 when I saw this in the theater. Like, there's a deleted scene somewhere where he's like, is this the only shirt you have?
I mean, the hat itself is a choice. Add the t-shirt. I don't understand.
So the thing, and so going back to this Jonas Nightingale character, right? Like, you're right. The movie, fundamentally in the beginning, the movie is very good. Like, it does exactly what you would want a movie like this to do, to set so much of the table, right? He's a con artist, he's this, blah, blah, blah. And the problem that I have is that I feel like he doesn't con enough. Like, he does, like, he, like, it almost is like, well, just the, like, the, either this movie might have maybe too much disdain for these sort of like traveling, like, or maybe religion as a whole, that it thinks that it's just the very fact that the guy is a faith healer is enough to suggest he's a con artist. And I mean, there are some things that obviously some like they're pulling these grifts, they're you know, collecting information, and they're delivering the information via earpiece and all that stuff. That's fine. Like, I think that's, but I feel like for some reason still it wasn't enough, right? Like, I wanted even more, and I wanted,
well, maybe on top of that,
maybe not just on stage, but like everywhere I want to see this.
Yeah. On top of that, he's not great when it does show up. Like, for me, the movie turns when he decides he's going to stomp on his mother's wristwatch to flirt with a girl. Like, what are you doing? Like,
right.
At that point, I thought, this makes zero sense. This guy's supposed to be smart, smart enough to be smarter than the people he's conning. And he throws his mother's wristwatch on the ground and smashes it for no reason And he thinks that this is going to sort of win him points with the girl he's trying to romance. It makes no sense at all. And then afterwards, he grabs another watch out of the bag of watches. And it's Deborah Winger who has to tell him, dude, this is a small town. That watch is busted. You cannot put on another watch. People are going to notice. So he's not good at it.
Right.
Also, the stupid scene with the squirt gun, like, he's not great at close-up magic.
No.
it fools everyone, but but I don't feel like his audience is maybe the sharpest.
Well, that's the thing. The smartest man in the room, as long as the room is full of dumb people.
So he's not great at being a con artist. And maybe this goes to the point.
Like, he's got a great outside shot.
Oh, God. that was my trope. I'll ask you now. Is there a trope, a cliche, or device you liked in this movie? Mine was white guy walks onto a basketball court, makes a bet or an agreement based on a single outside shot, sinks the shot, and everyone's amazed. Like, no one's guarding him. but everyone's amazed that he hit this shot. Like, I don't know. That, to me, very tropey. Very tropey. Do you have a trope, a cliche, or device?
I do. I love a choir rehearsing on the side of a road.
Just rehearse anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Just any type of rehearsing. And I mean, this, I agree with the watch scene. Cause like, again, this movie is like, well, what are you doing?
It's like why would this attract anyone? I mean, I guess it doesn't work. She's not impressed by it. Omelia thinks that it's amazing that the watch went in the water because it's like it's baptized.
Yeah.
Is she playing along with the con, or is she really impressed? I don't know.
Right. That's another part of that scene where I'm like, are they all grifting with him, or are they believing in him? And if they believe in him, then it, like, that creates a question for me. It's like, there's nothing about their activity on the bus suggests, like, it's not under like wraps. It's clear what they're doing all the time in front of everybody that's on the road. So if they're becoming disenchanted with them, like, are they hired? Like, that was the thing. It's like, is this a brand new group that was just hired? You know, maybe that's what it is. And they're like,
does he get a different group of angels every 2 months so that no one really knows who he is?
Right. And if you can explain that, maybe do that. Like, there's if you cut out, it's not a very long movie, but there is a lot of slack that if you cut and choose to put some other elements in, like, give me these people. Like, I'd like to know, give me all of their backgrounds. You know what I mean? Give me a little something to these. I'd love to find out. And you could do it. You could give us backgrounds on each one of these people. The sheriff can do that. You know, the sheriff, you can have an expositional type moment where the sheriff is pulling up all of these people's rap sheets, where they come from. And, you know, as instead of just Jonas Nightingale and showing everybody. And I think there's a compelling movie there if you have all of this on the table, and then he's able to still convince people that, because I mean, I feel like even like the charges weren't that big of a deal. You know, it was like, mm-hmm. he smoked marijuana and he stole a car. And it's like, I think he needed to be a little bit more bad. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like that wasn't enough. Like, there was always that, and that, I think that's the kind of the critique on the whole movie as a whole, is like, everything just wasn't quite enough. Like, make him worse. Cause then, well, they do the scene.
On top of that, if he is a good con artist, I think that you would expect him to use at least a kernel of the truth to do his con, right? So tell that story, right. You know, tell that story that the first night you're there, I used to be a sinner and Jesus saved me, or something like that. So the sheriff has no leg to stand on. I honestly don't believe anything about this sheriff. I think the sheriff's the biggest con man in the entire movie.
Because how did he get elected?
I don't know. I don't know.
That accent in Rustwater.
Liam Neeson. I mean, I would even buy the accent, because it's not like he's trying to put on a Southern accent or whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
like, look, maybe he is from Ireland and he just happened to find himself in Rustwater, Kansas, or wherever they are.
As one does when they're visiting America.
He's hell-bent on exposing this preacher as a charlatan. He doesn't want to give them a permit because of the town's unemployment. Like, dude, you're not the mayor. And I don't believe this thing with Deborah Winger either. Like, they fall in love because why?
Right.
Everything about this sheriff
because he has this. So here's the thing. There is another better movie, right? You introduce a sheriff who is imposing himself as the moral compass for this town. He's acting on behalf of this town as if to say, they don't know any better, so I'm going to take care of it. And that's where these two could be at odds, right? You could make that an interesting, and you could have Jonas Nightingale even point that out to the sheriff and make that relationship complicated, you know? But they don't. Like, there's all of these seeds are planted and none of them are watered.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing door buster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
All right, so if there's one tweak that you could make, there's probably a ton of tweaks, but if there's
I think a better director changes this entire movie.
Interesting. All right, I think, because I was doing a little bit of research, they considered Michael Keaton for this
part. Yeah, that was the other one I was going to discuss, too.
I think Michael Keaton hits this out of the park.
I don't think he does with this director. So that's where I stand by the director.
Okay, all right.
I think that this issue is, at its core, this movie is either introducing topics that are more interesting and not delivering, or they're accidentally accidentally introducing things. Like, maybe they didn't even know that they had something going on here.
I think Michael Keaton is just a much better actor, number one. Number two, I think he could do the physical stage thing better than, I mean, there. In terms of preaching, Steve Martin is like a B, which is passable, right? In terms of his choreography on stage, he's like a D minus. He looks comical up there, which of course he is. He's a comic, right?
Right.
I don't know. I think another actor, Michael Keaton, could do that sort of gritty, cynical, you know, more seedy part, but also be believable because he's pretty charismatic as well. I think that would have improved this quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it almost seems as though, like, I think from a research perspective, like, I wonder how much, you know, Steve Martin like was just like, hey man, I know what these guys are like. I see the Jimmy Swaggerts. I see these guys. I know what you're going for. I think there would have been a benefit to go to something like this, like where you like find a Benny Hinn type situation. Mm-hmm. Also go to a very sincere churches, muted search. Like,
is this movie better with an all black cast? I think it is.
And an all white choir.
inexplicably just a death death metal choir. No, I think like someone like Denzel, someone like, you know, someone like Lawrence Fishburne or something like that. Deborah Winger's, you know, I think she's a
Wait, Lawrence Fishburne is playing the Deborah Winger part.
I think this is a much more interesting story. I think that there's...
Can Eddie Murphy do this better?
Yes. He's perfect. We just solved it. This is an Eddie Murphy part. And I think that isn't Keaton... He's probably already making the next Batman movie at this point, right?
92, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So he's probably got Batman conflicts. And...
I can't imagine Steve Martin's cheap, but I bet you Michael Keaton was getting pretty expensive at this point.
I think at this point,
Batman Returns is 92.
Yeah. At this point, you can't afford him. I think that, Eddie Murphy's kind of on a downturn at this point, right?
Yeah. Well, let's see. 92. Yeah. I would think that this is is this getting into that in between phase for him?
I think it is.
Because 92, he's starting his comeback. 92 is when he makes Boomerang and Distinguished Gentleman. So this would have actually been like a perfect time.
Right. So I think
by that, comeback, that, I mean like yeah. from, because it Coming to America comes out in 88, and then Harlem Nights bombs, Another 48 Hours bombs, and he was just sort of like kind of mailing it in. And then Boomerang is like, he seems to be back.
Yeah. I think if this was like, Eddie Murphy, Whoopi Goldberg. This is a much better movie. Worst soundtrack ever, right? They chose a Don Henley song that is just horrible. And then you've got the Meatloaf. Meatloaf's in the movie, which is, I tend to like that. You've got Meatloaf in the movie. Why not use a Meatloaf song? I'm not a huge Meatloaf guy. Like, so it didn't help. The gospel, well, again, if you like gospel music, Sister Act's probably better, but you know, this is okay. This is all right.
Yeah, it's again, I do think it's just a little, it's just off. Like every moment is just a little off. Like the performances will be like, again, with the Steve Martin, like if you're gonna play up the preacher performance comically, then just have that be kind of throughout, and then have his sinister turns be the moments where you're like, ooh, there's something else lurking here. But
so yeah, that's right.
But like his regular persona, it's a little unclear what his motivations are, and like why does he choose to be somewhat sympathetic towards this kid, you know, like shielding him from his con. Like that's a moment where you're like, okay, well, what is this about? And then it never really delivers on it, right? And it's like there are lines in this movie, like when you were talking about like the whole manipulator, like he's obvious, and like he's like, you're saying you're a fake? He's like, no, I'm a fake. He's like, well, if it gets the job done, what difference does it make? It's like, it makes all the difference in the world. It's like, these are interesting statements. Do something with it. You know what I mean? Like there's, because I think that's like he when he tells the sheriff, basically like, look, I'm putting on a show, you know, and when they're saying like that, like they want to give their money for the show, that's fine. Who cares? And I think that's a compelling concept when juxtaposed to people that are, they don't think it's a show, right? It's sort of like, you know, there's certain, you know, you find that with like certain, you know, talking heads on news stations, you know, regardless whether it's Fox or CNN. And it's like, because they're on a news station, people assume that it's news as opposed to entertainment. And then other times it would like be very clear, like, no, we're just entertainers. We're just, you know, this is just opinion. But if you're not, like, for a long time, people didn't, you know, there were certain conservatives that didn't realize that Colbert's, you know, parody of a conservative was a parody. And so they feel like really betrayed, because like, yeah, but no, but he never asked you to believe him. And so he kind of, this character, Jonas Nightingale, is sort of, you know, keeping himself protected by this notion of honesty when pinned down. But even that's also a lie.
I mean,
and that's interesting.
I've got a lot of experience with this world, and it turns out that people who sort of find themselves in the role of the faith healer, they start to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
They start to believe their own scam. And it's, you know,
I know a guy who believed that he had the power to heal, and he tried to heal my ears. And when he didn't work, he was mad at me.
Look, he's not wrong.
He just sat and he really wanted to do it.
He didn't know why to be mad at you, but being mad at you is the right decision.
Yeah, I felt like he really was like adamant. And so I was like, well, this means a lot to him. I'll let him do it. You know, most likely nothing's going to happen, but, you know, I leave the door open for something, you know, to be surprised by joy, I guess. He just sat there and he was all about it and saying like, oh man, do you feel warm? And I'm like, no, I mean, other than the fact that you're like your hands on my head, but, and he just kept insisting and he was praying about it. And then he's like, all right, is everything louder? I'm like, no, but I really appreciate you going through the effort.
You're like, so mad. You're like, I don't think I'm going to work with this particular part of the narrative. But I could be a Bible boinker if that would help. I'm a religious scholar by trade. I've never heard the word Bible boinker, and I feel like there's definitely a blind spot in my research. I want to know more about these Bible blankers.
So I've watched this. My daughter watched it with me, just because like she was being polite. And man, when Liam Neeson claps the butterfly, she audibly laughs and just goes, "Why? Why?" And like, not like there was nothing else. Like, it was just why. And that's such a great question for that particular moment. I think there's a lot, like there are enough scenes in this movie where you go, why that? Why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm actually interested in some of these things that you've introduced, because I don't understand why Liam Neeson would be interested in Deborah Winger. If he, you know, because it runs contrary to this character that they apparently have put out there. So I don't understand that. But I don't, I mean, I couldn't imagine caring less about any other subplot. Like, that is the least interesting subplot.
I don't understand what the appeal, like Deborah Winger's, you know, she's attractive, but everything else about this guy is like, I can't stand con artists, and these people deserve better, and you are doing something immoral. And oh, by the way, I want to marry you after 3 days.
Right.
Who are you, and why do you live in Rust Water? He's built like a Greek god, so there's that. He's totally out of place in this movie.
Yeah, and I think, like, again, there's an introduction of a notion where, you know, Jonas Nightingale is, we don't see any like romantic leanings between him and the Deborah Winger character, which I think is important. I think that's good. But he tries to control her, and he does try to keep her with him. Like, and it's not paternal and it's not romantic, but it is a power play. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, like, they introduce it, but they don't do anything with it. Like, I understand if maybe that's why you've got this maybe potential love thing going on with this Liam Neeson sheriff, but you could do that in another way. You can introduce that, like, Jonas Nightingale needs to be the center of this movie, and he is and isn't at the same time.
It's like, interesting that they chose to, like, you almost are rooting for Steve Martin and Deborah Winger to find each other. Like there is a little bit of like chemistry between them, and they go a completely different direction. He gives her a ruby ring at the end. I don't understand why.
Well, that's, I guess that's been like a running thing. She wants that ring, and so eventually gives it to her. And like, he keeps it from her as like a power play, right? That's kind of how I interpret it. Like, yeah, give her the ring, but he's like, no, I'm
gonna, I mean, I guess it makes the movie interesting. I mean, I guess it would be pretty tropey if he finally found love at the end with Deborah Winger, but I don't understand the way that they ended it. So let's talk about the ending.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So something really touches a nerve with him. He sees a real miracle. He doesn't really know what to do with it. He actually has a pretty honest conversation with the kid. The kid doesn't care that he's a charlatan. He just knows that he's been healed. And he wants to go on the road with him, right? Which is exactly what everyone on the bus wants, because they think that they can pull, you know, seven figures in Dallas if they got this kid. He's in his feelings. He lies, says he's going to get the kid. He doesn't, starts hitchhiking to Pensacola, Florida. And then it starts raining, which you know, sort of, everyone's been praying for rain the whole time. They want it to rain so they can save their little town. And it starts raining, and all of a sudden he has some kind of Jules Winfield moment where he feels the touch of God on the road to Pensacola. But he drives away. He drives out of town. Am I supposed to be happy about this? He saw the rain and he's happy about it. Now he's no longer a faith healer. Is that what the story's trying to tell me? What happens with the rest of these people that he just left in the lurch? All the members of his team. What happens with Deborah Winger? What happens with this kid the next day? Like, I don't know what to do at the end of this movie.
So let me do for this what I do for things like Howard the Duck and Teen Wolf. Let me try to advocate for this movie. Just because I've seen it so much, and here we go. So he leaves. He sees a miracle, and I think there's probably this element of like, wow, maybe this is real. And he's like, I don't know what to do with this either. Either I continue to pull this grift, you know, and the kid is like, hey, I don't care if you're fake, because on one hand you can say, okay, the kid is enamored with this guy, but at the same time, he's like, look, I've been healed. So you may think you're a fake, but, God's using you. So I want to be around. If I want to be around God, I think I need to be around you. Whether you are, you know, whether you're aware of it or not, you're a vessel, or you've been chosen that way. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. You bring hope to people. You bring inadvertent healing, perhaps. So, you know, whatever the reason God uses you, I want to be a part of that. So that's why I think maybe you could justify that's where the kid's coming from. And at this point, you know, Jonas Nightingale's been like, hey, you know, I've been a fake the whole time, and I've been honest about it. And if God's, I don't, that's what I'm comfortable with. I'm comfortable with being a fake. He says that, you know, he's telling this guy, you're the genuine article, you're the real deal. Basically, like, look, I wouldn't know what to do with you. I'm a con man at heart. I don't do miracles. I don't surround myself with miracles, because that makes no sense to me. This makes sense to me. So God is here. I'm going to leave here. And you've all been touched by God. I'm going to go away. And whether he is, and I don't necessarily buy that he was leaving to go like, well, I'm just got to, I got to do the right thing. I think he doesn't know what the right thing is. He's like, I'm the best thing for these people is I'm not around them. And the best thing for me is to just get away. And on the way out, he sees, and I don't think he's happy with God. I don't think he feels like, wow, what an incredible thing. And you can make the argument that as he leaves and as the rain comes down, he realizes that God is blessing that town now that he's left it. So he sees his leaving as maybe a, like, the rain sort of validates his decision. And he's like, wow, so the rain is there. He's leaving. And he's like, good, God, you stay there. I'm going here.
It's interesting. Okay, if that's true, and maybe it is the best thing for this town for him to leave. And I could get on board with him leaving is the best thing for everyone. I don't think he's done conning. Like, I think he's just going to con Pensacola. I think he's...
Well, he can con, and he doesn't necessarily, but he doesn't have to con as an evangelist either.
Yeah, I don't know if he's done with that either. Like, I don't know that the story has told me enough to tell me that he's not just going to pick up in some other town and pull the same con that he's been pulling.
I think a better movie shows him, like, you know, 5 months later doing the same thing on a much smaller scale, but with a different, like, viewpoint, because he could be at this point believing it's like, well, God used me. I actually do believe in God. And now he's empowered in a different way. Instead of it being like, well, I know I'm fake. Now he might believe that he's got something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that could make him even more sinister, right? I mean, that's the part where, you know, I mean, if you want to do critiques on some of these, you know, mega church pastors or faith healers, it's like, and going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's like, if you believe you can do it, that's somehow even more, that could open the door for even more conning, right? Because now you're coming by it from with a certain level of earnestness, and you feel like you've got God on your side as opposed to your own intellect. And that can be a real dangerous spot to be in if you're still grifting. That's a more interesting story, right? Do that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so too. I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of curious what happens the next day. And, you know, is it like, does Philip Seymour Hoffman's like sort of step into the preacher role and, you know,
does just the kid
basically do the same grift over and over and over with the kid, you know?
How about a sequel where the kid is now, older, and he's basically taken on the Jonas Nightingale persona.
Uh-huh. And I mean, so if you want to make this hyper realistic, because I've seen this a lot, is that the kid is going to relapse and he's going to be on crutches again, like,
right,
in 2 days. I mean, like, there is something, I don't know, there's something psychosomatic about these experiences where you have the experience and the warm glow goes away, and all of a sudden you're back where you started, and it causes a lot of consternation for a lot of people. I do want to talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman. So that's who brought us here, right? To say underutilized is sort of a understatement. I think he could be the better lead in this movie. If given the right script, he would be a very interesting lead in this movie. It did not need to be Philip Seymour Hoffman to have this particular part. Do you,
not Philip Seymour Hoffman yet.
He's not Philip Seymour Hoffman yet.
I think is like one of his first like films.
It's weird. It's weird with this, because sometimes with a actor of that caliber, like, all right, so he's not Philip Seymour Hoffman yet, but I can see the early potential. Sometimes you get that, and I don't get that in this movie.
No.
Do you like, in general, are you a fan of Philip Seymour Hoffman?
I say yes. I find him, I like him when he's menacing. I think he can be very funny when he's being ridiculous. Most of the time, I like him. In fact, sometimes I find him very impressive, but he's so bad in Twister.
See, I was thinking about that movie. I was thinking, this has a lot in common with Twister. Like, you got a team of people with Philip Seymour Hoffman traveling across
obnoxious.
The West. Definitely obnoxious. I think he's amazing in Boogie Nights. I think he's one of the things that I most look forward to in Big Lebowski.
Oh, for sure.
I think he's perfect for Punch Drunk Love. You know, he's been in a lot of sort of grittier crime drama.
I think he's great in Moneyball.
Oh yeah.
I think he's top shelf in The Master.
The thing he won the Oscar for is Capote, right?
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
Interesting.
I didn't like him. And it was an accent thing. It was like, but I like Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's a little bit like, sometimes you criticize actors who always play themselves, like Denzel or whatever.
Mm.
But I would be disappointed. If Denzel came in and he was like the lead in Radio or whatever, I would be very disappointed.
I mean, the amount of times that we offhandedly just take a dump on Radio, it almost feels like we owe it to our listeners to cover Radio on.
I will not show up.
We're gonna have to bring in the guest.
It'll be my son. They'll be like, yeah, my dad said I had to talk with you for an hour. What are we talking about?
Oh man.
All right. Is this movie better, worse, or on par with the Ron Howard movie?
Man, could you imagine how much better this movie is if Ron Howard directs it?
Fantastic.
The whole time I'm thinking about it, I'm like, Ron Howard would get this. Ron Howard would, this would be such a great Ron Howard movie. Like, this is one of those ones where, like, we keep on, like, people I think don't really know if, like, do you guys like Ron Howard? This movie with Ron Howard, I think he knocks it out of the park. I think he gets the best performance.
I think that most movies would be improved with Ron Howard, right?
Yeah.
And this is one of those movies. It's not really a genre flick. It's kind of it's unique in a few ways. Like I can think of a few. What was the Duvall movie where he was faith healer? What's that? The Apostle.
The Apostle.
The Apostle has some DNA here. Definitely, darker, more dramatic tone in that film. Yeah, Howard would hit this out of the park.
Yeah, so this becomes, I think, like, I mean, it's got to be like a Howard, like, minus, like, six, maybe? I mean,
I was going to say five. I think Howard does a lot better with this. I still think Steve Martin does well and just isn't the right person for this.
Well, and that's why I think a director, like, if a director's not really, I have no idea about this director, but my gut tells me that, like, there's a reason why there wasn't much more cinematically from this person. I think a director with a little more gravitas can sit there and say, don't ham it up right now. Bring it down a notch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or, do your thing, but, like, not like a Steve Martin thing. Do it like this thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think in this case, I could see the director being like, dude, I got Steve Martin. I'm going to let Steve Martin do Steve Martin right there. What do you want me to do in this scene? Just go up there and just, you know, mock a faith healer. Like, that's kind of what it feels like. Like it reminds me of when I would see Robin Williams pretend to be a faith healer, like when he riffing or something like that. It's like, it's kind of just a one dimensional, swipe at like the surface of what this character is. And I'm like, I want more than that, because if it's so kind of goofy, then I don't buy that they're buying it.
So you're a stand-up comic. I'm kind of a student of the history of comedy. I never liked Steve Martin's stand-up, and I think it just missed me. It just maybe missed me by a decade.
It was probably a little more alt-y at the time, but like not like crazy alt, but like it's a little unconventional. a little more performative. And I think if you, I think Steve Martin's stand up is more appreciated conceptually now than maybe it would be enjoyed like to rewatch, if that makes any sense. Because I think at the time,
did you ever have like Steve Martin records that you listened to?
No.
All right, neither did I.
His some of his stuff would show up on like Dr. Demento, and I would always be like, "Oh, cool, it's Steve Martin," and I would respect it more than I would be like enthralled by it, because I think what he was doing was something different.
Yes, he was a little bit. He wasn't so bizarre that he was like an Andy Kaufman kind of guy, because it was almost like the audience. It's very similar to this movie. The audience knew that he was playing a part, and they were in on the joke.
Right.
But, you know, when he would play like Mr. Arrogant, you know, celebrity guy who's only interested in money, it was like, yeah, there's probably a kernel of truth there, but he's made it he's made it kind of a caricature of that. And everyone kind of was in on the joke. I don't know if you've tried to watch Steve Martin recently. I don't think it holds up. And I think it's because we've had a ton of other people who have followed suit with what he was doing and improved upon it.
Uh-huh. You probably feel about Steve Martin the same way I feel about the Beatles.
Oh, yeah. You appreciate that they changed music forever. You're not yourself a big fan.
Right. Like, yeah, great. You paved the way for the people I prefer.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that isn't to say that I don't like some of their stuff. The same way I kind of, you know, I could probably make that same, you probably make that same argument about Steve Martin. Like Steve Martin, it was, again, there wasn't the oversaturation of comedy. He was kind of, like, I think maybe embodied sort of the 70s culture in a lot of ways. There was almost an irreverence in the performance to the performance itself. Like it wasn't following some of the rules. And so he was super charismatic, big smile, like everything. And then like, and cocky, but like not Chevy Chase cocky. So there was a lot, like he's kind of a movie star in a lot of ways, right? Like,
for a time, he was one of the biggest drawing actors in Hollywood. I loved him for a lot of movies. I loved him in Roxanne, a movie that I don't think holds up. I loved him in The Three Amigos. I loved him in L.A. Story. You know, there's just a ton of these movies. Parenthood is a great example.
Parenthood is great. I love The Jerk. He's, you know, I love Three Amigos, and I don't know, but see, here's the thing about Three Amigos. I love, I think it's hilarious. And the funny thing is that Steve Martin's like the straight man for the most part. I mean, he's ridiculous, but of the three, he's more of the straight man. He's like the handsome lead, and he's got some really funny stuff in there, but it's like a collectively funny movie. I always loved The Man with Two Brains, and it's just absolutely bonkers. It's just dumb. It's,
I always loved, I think I, as a child, I watched All of Me probably a dozen times. It was just totally always on television. I watched it over and over. I can't really recommend its political sensibilities these days.
No, not really.
For a while,
My Blue Heaven, I always enjoyed.
Dirty
Rotten Scoundrels, I enjoyed parts.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've seen a lot. I find Bowfinger has a couple of moments that make me laugh. But I think Eddie Murphy's really funny in Bowfinger.
80s and 90s, Steve Martin, it was almost can't miss. Like it's very hard to think of him in a role where it didn't work. And this, for whatever reason, you decided to choose the one Steve Martin movie in the early 90s that was, didn't work.
It's 92 was an interesting year for me, because I can't, it's so funny. Like I can't think of this movie without thinking of the movie Toys with Robin Williams.
Never saw it.
Because these, you don't need to. There were two movies I was super excited about. Well, I mean, of course, like Batman Returns, but I mean, like this, Leap of Faith and Toys were two movies I was really excited about were coming out. I was jazzed. I'm like, man, these are comedy heavyweights, and what appears to be like interesting roles and like in like a stories that I'm like I'm kind of intrigued by. And Toys was such a misfire, like just such a misfire, that I remember how I felt coming out of the theater, and it was a bigger version of how I felt about when I left the theater for this movie, because I was disappointed in this one and I was kind of wrestling with it, like, and I think I was still in this like not quite fully embracing movies in the same way that like I try to explore them now, but I knew there was just meat left on that bone, and I'm mad that I saw.
I think oftentimes that either it's a bad movie or it could have, you know, it was this close. I think sometimes I will have a more of an emotional response when the movie was just almost good.
Yeah, totally. Because you're sitting there, you're going like, well, I mean, you could have. Why didn't you? It's right. I mean, I want it now. Now I know what I want, and it's already been done, so it's not going to be done again. Like it's like watching your team lose the Super Bowl. It's like, well, it's not. It might not ever happen again. But it was right there. Like it was right there.
Is there a half a battle one to groan moment in this film?
I don't know.
All right, I've got one.
Okay.
Omelia goes into the diner and she orders 2 bowls of chili, hold the onions. You can't do that. This is a diner, Omelia. Best case scenario, they've been cooking that chili since 5 a.m. The onions are in there. They're dissolved, right? There's nothing you can do about that. More likely, that chili came out of a can. There's no hold the onions. This is Omelia is she's bizarre. She's a bizarre character in this film, and I can't look away. So that's
so you're saying just when you're your half the battle moment is when you're at a diner, no substitutions.
When you're at a diner and you order the chili, don't order 2 bowls. Number one, try for one first. Hold the onions. Never. Don't ever hold the onions on diner chili.
two bowls. Give it a sec.
See if the first one does okay.
You can order another bowl right after. One's for eating, one's for soaking my bunions.
News! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home. Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.